5 p.m. on Wednesday. Time for American Hit Radio here at WHPC 90.3. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. With me, my lovely wife, co-host, and engineer extraordinaire, Heidi Morales Ryan. What did we do Wednesdays? We have been... Well, we had a live guest last week, which was really cool, so that switched things up. But now we're back to our standard-issued fare, pretty much, of looking at albums in their entirety, classic albums. We're looking at albums in one of two categories, a classic album that was very popular in its time and made the top 40, and then looking at another list of classic albums that did not ever make the top 40, which was a bit more obscure list. To keep some sort of a balance, we're just going to move through them all now in perfect chronological order because we caught up.
Finally.
Yeah, it took a while, didn't it? It took us almost a year to catch up. So now, the time period that we're looking at, it's exactly where we were when we covered our last album. Number 58 on our list of the top 500 of the top 40 was Cream's Wheels of Fire album. We managed to squeeze in... Well, we played every track. We didn't play the entirety of every track, but we managed to get the entire album in 1 hour. That was released in July 1968, and so was this album. It was a pretty happening month for albums. In fact, in the same year, this is the same month, Creedence Clearwater Revival released their debut album. The band released music from Big Pink, which was their debut album. And this album came out by the Moody Blues. It was their third album, and it's called In Search of the Lost Chord. It's the album that we're going to be looking at in its entirety today. On this, their third album, the Moody Blues, you know, hit upon the stylistic format that would pretty much define the remainder of their career. In Search of the Lost Chord is a template, really, for all Moody Blues albums that followed. So much is in common from this point forward with all of their other work. It layers the dime store philosophy type of lyricism that they do over rich melodies with mellotron-based song structures, and the songs almost always segue into one another. Right there, you've got pretty much the description of every Moody Blues album since 1968. And this is the one where it all began. All five band members contribute to the songwriting. That's another thing that's pretty common for most of their albums. With most of the songs credited to just one single member. So it's odd, really, then, that the songwriting is fairly cohesive. And it's very difficult to discern, like, who writes what, because there's an awful lot of overlapping in the songwriting styles of the five different band members. Subsequent albums would even be packaged the same as this record, with gatefold sleeves and elaborate cover art. Each of the albums that came after this album, In Search of the Lost Chord, had its own charm. But this is the album that stands out because it provides the basis for the next 20-some-odd years of the band's career. So we're going to focus on this one, because the Moody Blues are one of those bands that either you love them or you just dismiss them. I don't know anybody who hates them. It's just some people don't really seem to follow them at all, while there's other people who are absolutely head over heels in love with the band. And I guess I was around 1972 or 1973 when I started to really finally take notice of them. So I didn't know this when it was released. This was one of those things where after a hit came out around 1971, Story in Your Eyes was the first song that I remember really loving by them. And then I went back a little bit and started checking out their catalog, Question of Balance, To Our Children's Children's Children, and then finally getting back to this album, In Search of the Lost Chord, and realized that they were all very much of a kind, each of these albums. But
like storytelling albums or something.
Yeah, I mean, they always seem to have like some sort of conceptual theme. They'd begin and end, sometimes with talking or with some sort of like interlude sort of, or an introductory track. They'd end with an outro, and then they'd have some loosely related theme in the middle of it. Children's Children's Children, of course, about the passing of age and everything else. This album, In Search of the Lost Chord, is also more or less about discovery. Pretty much most of the album seems to be more or less something on that bent, whether it's literal discovery, as in Dr. Livingstone, or if it's like spiritual discovery, as in Timothy Leary. And the album sort of bounces around with that very loose concept to hold it together. But it's an album that, although it is very rooted in like the hippy-dippy aspects of what was happening in around 1967, 1968, I think it holds up quite nicely for the time. I mean, a lot of albums do. So albums by the Rolling Stones in this era, albums by the Beatles in this era obviously hold their own. But I would say that the Moody Blues, like I said, established the template here, and this is where everything more or less continues. So let's dive right in. We'll play the opening track, which is, like I said, the introduction. In this instance, it's called Departure, written by the band's drummer, Graham Edge. And we'll run that right into the first, I guess you could call it technically the first song on the album, written by John Lodge.
Be it sight, sound, smell or touch, the something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sound, or the strength of an oak with roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories haunt and to use them to help. In the lanes of our time.
one of the better known tracks off of the album, In Search of the Lost Chord, Ride My Seesaw. Mostly, the hits for the band are attributed to Justin Hayward, who is definitely the most popish of all the songwriters in the band, and definitely he's got a real knack for melody. He's a pretty remarkable songwriter. But in this instance, that song was written by John Lodge. So just, there's always an exception to the rule. Side one of the album, really, after that introduction bit, which I said was written by the percussionist Graham Edge, the songwriting bounces back and forth throughout side one between John Lodge and Ray Thomas, with them alternating songs until the end of side one. So we won't be hearing anything by Justin Hayward until we get to side two. This is a real band effort. The album that was before this, we did cover in this series. If you remember, Heidi, we did a show that was dedicated to Days of Future Past.
Oh, yeah.
With Nights in White Satin, of course, and Tuesday Afternoon, that album. That's a great record. Now, that album, what made that different, and the reason I don't consider that to be the template for what came afterward, is because that album had the Boston or some symphony orchestra. I forget which one. It was something like that.
Okay.
I think it was a studio orchestra, actually.
Oh.
But they had a lot of accompaniment to play the interludes, and there was all sorts of things that were happening between the tracks to utilize the orchestra. In this instance, the band is playing all of the instruments themselves. There are no guests on the album. They don't really need the orchestra, because now that they're using the Mellotron as much as they are, that is more or less providing the cheap man's orchestra, so to speak, you know, providing all of that sort of sounds. I've read that there are 33 different instruments that appear throughout the course of this album, each of them played by one of the five members. For instance, John Lodge plays cello at some point, and although he's not a cello player, a cellist, he managed to do it because he tuned it in the same manner that you would tune a bass guitar. So he just had to basically get used to the instrument itself, but the notation was standard for him. So that's how that worked. Ray Thomas
that's
happens.
That's pretty clever, actually.
Yeah, why not? Ray Thomas, who normally plays things like flute for the band, in this instance was able to pick up an oboe. So throughout the course of the record, you're going to hear like all sorts of different sounds. Speaking of Ray Thomas, let's play the track that he had, one of the two that he wrote for this album, a song called Dr. Livingstone, I presume.
Dr. Livingstone, I presume, stepping out of the jungle gloom into the midday sun. What did you find there? Did you stand a while and stare? Did you meet anyone? I've seen butterflies galore. I've seen people big and small. I've still not found what I'm looking for. Captain Scott, you were so bold, now you're looking rather cold out there in the snow. What did you find there? Did you stand a while and stare? Did you meet anyone? I've seen polar bears and seals, I've seen giant Antarctic eels. I've still not found what I'm looking for. Stare, did you meet anyone?
Track is written by Ray Thomas, the band's woodwind player, among other things, and percussion, and obviously songwriter as well. I said all five of them were writers, which is a very unusual situation for any band, you know. And it's the thing that more or less I guess gives them.
It's an embarrassment of riches in terms of writers.
But it's weird because it doesn't really provide diversity per se, because they seem
it's
to
odd. They're
write.
Like so of like minds.
Yeah,
so it
right.
Seems.
Exactly. It's really that's that.
They must
what
have been
surprises
hanging out
me
together
about
too
it.
Much.
Now, in 1968, the thing that you were going to be, if you're going to write a theme album, it's almost a given that you're going to touch on psychedelic subjects, which is to say, you know, mysticism, drugs, you know, that sort of thing. You know, and that's exactly what side one is. I guess it's the centerpiece of the album now is the rest of side one, where it's a song that segues into another song that segues back to the theme. House of Four Doors pretty much is exactly as hippie, you know,
psychedelic
as you would imagine. You know, like I said, the dime store mysticism of, you know, philosophy about, you know, oh my God, you know, what happens when you are. When you are confronted with these options and what happens. And then, of course, this segues into a song called Legend of a Mind, another Ray Thomas song, which is about Timothy Leary. And then back to House of Four Doors. So the whole underlying theme here, without a doubt, is about drug use and psychedelia. But it's really only implicit, mostly because of Timothy Leary being the subject of the song. And Timothy
well, and Four
Leary,
Doors is also like an Alice in Wonderland sort of illusion type
exactly,
thing.
Which of course is again something that every right going back to Jefferson Airplane kept going
right,
back
Lewis
to
Carroll.
That story and right Lewis Carroll had written and how that was obviously all allusions to drug use and or say you know alternate ways of perceiving reality.
There you go.
Put it at that. So. Just at this point, I think it's a rather interesting theme with John Lodge providing the House of Four Doors slices of bread that surrounds the meat of the sandwich, which is Ray Thomas's Legend of a Mind. The remainder, then, of side one of the album In Search of the Lost Chord.
We'll be right back.
the coast, you'll hear them boast about a light they say that shines so clear. So raise your glass, we'll drink a toast to the little man who sells you thrills along the pier. He'll take you up, he'll bring you down, he'll plant your feet back firmly on the ground. He flies so high, he swoops so low, he knows exactly which way he's gonna go.
Thank you.
All right, you are listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3. I'm Tom Ryan with my lovely wife, Heidi Morales Ryan, as well, as we are right now presenting to you the album In Search of the Lost Chord by the Moody Blues in its entirety. A rather interesting album, very typical for 1968, one of the few that I think have withstood the test of time. You know, an interesting thing about that track we just heard with that whole House of Four Doors and the middle track called Legend of a Mind, which is the song about Timothy Leary. Here's something that I did not know about Timothy Leary. Did you realize that when he passed away, he had his remains cremated and then he was launched into space?
By what company?
Some sort of private satellite.
Oh.
Just launched him up. So he's his
but
cremated.
That's a cool thing to do.
He's actually in the same satellite as Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. I could see them wanting to hang out for eternity.
It's so like, wow, that's kind of crazy. It's like, man, obviously, I don't think they'd have much to say to each other if they are now like basically back to being stardust, essentially. But it's very cool conceptually when you think of those two floating around in space.
Yeah.
From a theoretical side. All right. Now, if you were around in 1968 or even for years afterward, if you were listening to this album, it would be time to go up to the record player and flip it over to side two. Side two has got a bit of a different flavor to it. It's got a couple of actually, you know, two songs written exclusively by Justin Hayward. And one song, there's only one song on the entire album where the songwriting credits are split. So that's on this side, too, with Hayward being half writer, I suppose, of that song. The thing about Justin Hayward is that when his name is attached to a song, I always tend to pay attention a little bit more because there's usually, I'm very impressed with his ability to write memorable songs and great melodies. There's usually just something about his material that just latches onto me. And I think really he probably is the main reason for the band's popularity over all the years. I think this song might sort of convey an aspect of that. The first song on side two of the album, B, whatever you want to call it, written by Justin Hayward. The song is called Voices in the Sky.
Bluebird flying high, tell me what you say. If you could talk to me, what news would you bring of voices in the sky? Nightingale hovering high, harmonize the wind. Darkness, your symphony, I can hear you sing. Voices in the sky. Just what is happening to me? I lie awake with the sound of the sea calling to me. I am listening, voices in the sky. Children with a skipping rope, tell me what you sing. Playtime is nearly gone, the bell's about to ring. Voices in the sky. Just what is happening to me? I lie awake with the sound of the sea calling to me. Bluebird flying high, tell me what you see.
What news would you bring of voices in the sky? Voices in the sky.
Justin Hayward, what I consider to be myself, maybe one of the prettier songs on the album.
It is lovely.
That tends to be his style of writing. He's usually just, quite, he's a pretty writer. And his own song, of course, about some sort of spirituality, paying attention, listening for voices in the sky. I wonder if they sat around, then they must have, the five of them sat around and said, okay, this is going to be the theme. Let's write about...
It would be interesting to... be able to interview them and or read an interview if it exists from this time.
I'm sure it does. I just don't know if they basically were all saying, okay, we're going to go to our own separate rooms and we're going to write songs that have to do with spirituality, one way or another, or a quest of some sort. I mean, somehow you put those two things together as though that, because there's two ways of basically interpreting the word. Maybe they said they wanted to write songs about searching. And without meaning, like whether
very
it was a,
loose subject matter,
right? So that'd be the spiritual quest on one side, and on the other side, you could talk about it, in a physical manner, like Dr. Livingstone, I presume, going off on his own physical tangent of discovery, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But when they came together, then all of a sudden, the band came up with this loose theme. But it's the type of thing that they did on just about every record afterward. To Our Children's Children's Children, there was the subsequent album after this.
So many bands were doing that, though. I mean, like you've mentioned. Rolling Stones, Beatles, Moody Blues. Who else? Yes, probably did stuff like that.
Well, that much later, though. I mean,
Pink
Yes.
Floyd.
Didn't, yeah, even then, late. That was later.
Oh, okay.
As far as bands actually putting
and
out
who?
Thematic stuff, The Who did. because Pete Townsend, he did everything that had to revolve around some sort of convoluted storyline. I mean, his whole career is based around that.
Yes.
But not many people were doing it in terms of with five different writers trying to come together with the same sort of a theme and then doing it continuously. Like I said, on the subsequent album, Children's Children's Children, it's a pain in the neck to say that title. But on that album, the theme was more or less about, evolution. And as we're talking about evolution, then that would mean that it was also, I guess, about going into the future. So there's they like to get involved in space travel and things like that on that album, which was also sort of, so you get the sense of from caveman to a moon man or spaceman sort of a thing happening on that album. And it's just a Moody Blues trait. As I said, either people, tend to love it or people just dismiss it. They can roll their eyes ridiculous.
Apparently, plenty of people did love it because that's why they were so famous.
This album reached number 23 on the pop charts, which is why it makes our list of the top 500 of the top 40, because it was a top 40 album. And I said also, this is the album that more or less did, set the pace for what they would be doing for the rest of their careers. Well, we didn't hear anything from the songwriter Mike Pinder yet. I think he's the only one that we didn't hear from. Let's see. Graham Edge, John Lodge, Ray Thomas going back and forth on side one. Justin Hayward, we just heard. He's the fourth member. So, Mike Pinder is the fifth member, and this is his... No, it's not his only contribution. Excuse me. He wrote two on this album. He wrote the final track as well. So... see if you can discern anything that makes this different, because I am pretty much amazed how all five of the Moodies are of like mind in their songwriting style. The name of this song is The Best Way to Travel.
Speeding through the universe. to travel. It's all a dream, light passing by on screen, and there's you and I on a beam.
Faster than
you want to understand hippie culture, this is a great album to begin with. It really is. That's the only track that's credited to two different writers, Justin Hayward and Ray Thomas, co-wrote that song together. Now, all these songs blend together, and with me interrupting each of them, I tend to feel as if I'm like ruining the continuity of the record. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to let the rest of the album play out. I can say goodbye now. We can both say goodbye, Heidi. And we'll let this finish with yet another. We'll start with another Justin Hayward track called The Actor. And then Graham Edge comes back with a small narrated track called The Word, very, very much like the beginning, to round it out to the final track, which is called Om, which is the word, and also, by the way, is the word that defines the title of the album, In Search of the Lost Chord, that chord being the chant Om. As this will all pull together. Well, thank you very much, everybody. It was a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the album. See you on Friday.
The curtain rises on the scene with someone chanting to be free. The play unfolds before my eyes. There stands the actor who is me. The sleeping hours take us far from traffic, telephones, and fear. Put out your problems with the cat. Escape until the bell you hear. Our reasons are the same, but there's no one we can blame. For there's nowhere we need go, and the only truth we know comes so easily.
Sound I've heard in your hello. This garden universe vibrates complete. Some we get a sound so sweet. Vibrations reach on up to become light, and then through gamma out of sight. Between the eyes and ears there lie the sounds of color and the light of a sigh. And to hear the sun, what a thing to believe, but it's all around if we could but perceive. To know ultraviolet, infrared and x-rays, beauty to find in so many ways. Two notes of the chord, that's our full scope. But to reach the chord is our life's hope. And to name the chord is important to some, so they give it a word, and the word is...
I know why the skies all cry.